We live in an increasingly uncertain world. Uncertainty seems to be everywhere. It seems to be the narrative of our day. There is financial uncertainty. It's this concept called secular stagnation, where we are caught in this recessional cycle, and we're looking for something to change the momentum to pull us out of it. But in the meantime, we're in this financial uncertainty. There's political uncertainty. There's been a real crisis in our political leadership over recent weeks and months here in the UK. We're also living in a world of moral uncertainty, where questions around life and where it begins, where it ends, human dignity, marriage, how we live in community in a post-Christian world. There is a crisis of values in Europe, especially. And in all of this uncertainty, and in this vacuum that has been created by all of the uncertainty, people have tried to understand and interpret what's going on in our world. And someone has come up with the acronym VUCA, that we live in a VUCA world, and I even think that acronym itself sounds aggressive. We live in a volatile, uncertain, complex, and angry world. And I would doubt that anyone in this room would disagree with me because of what we see playing out in our society. We live in a post-fact world, where fact and truth is disregarded and mixed with fiction. And when we have fact and fiction mixed together, we get faction and fear and division. We see it being played out on the world stage. You cast your eyes across the pond to America, and we have Donald Trump, who has built many amazing and fascinating and impressive buildings across the United States, an empire in real estate. If he is elected as president, he claims he will build a wall between the North and the South to prevent the Mexicans coming in to North America. The uncertain climate within the United States is welcoming such comments, because in times of uncertainty and fear, we tend to want to look to someone who is a strong man who will make us feel safe. We retreat behind our borders and our boundaries and our walls to a place of security and familiarity. There's this great border dispute between North and South Korea. There's a dispute in the Holy Land between Israel and Palestine. And when Jerusalem is at war, all of the world is at war. There are 60 territorial border disputes in the world. And we have experienced something of that in recent months with Brexit. Here we have a British nation in the midst of huge uncertainty in this VUCA world that has voted to leave the European Union, to take control of its borders, to re-establish its sovereignty. It seems to be a natural reaction for us as humans who live in the world in times of grave uncertainty to want to retreat behind the safety of our own walls and our borders. And what happens in these times is what we're seeing is that borders that already exist are re-emphasized and borders that never exist are built. And how do we, as people who claim to be citizens of the sovereign kingdom of Jesus Christ, how do we live in a world full of borders? How do we live in a society that wants to pull apart and separate for good reason? How do we live in a climate of fear? Well, we have some options. First of all, we should not be afraid. because Christians don't need to be afraid. So when we're hearing the constant news cycles coming from America and Europe and the Middle East and Asia, we don't need to fear, for we belong to the kingdom of heaven, and our king has already been victorious. You know that, don't you? We don't need to fear. We're on the winning side. So don't fear, first of all, but we should live in this world, and we should stand somewhere that gives us a vantage point to see over the boundary wall. And so often we're in the garden, if you like, and we're retreating behind our walls, and we cannot see what lies beyond. We cannot anticipate or even expect to know what experiences lie beyond the boundary. But for Christians living in this world, we need to have a vantage point where we can see beyond the borders. Have a show of hands, how many people have heard of New Horizon? Yeah. And I'm sure many of you have been to New Horizon. That's nearly the entire congregation here. And New Horizon has been set up as a conference on the North Coast for Christians to come to be given a fresh perspective on life as Christians living in this world. The Greek word for proclamation is also translated as horizon. And so we as Christians, as we seek to live in this VUCA world, this volatile, uncertain, complex, and angry world, rather than being fearful and retreating behind our walls, we position ourselves to have a vantage point that sees a new horizon beyond the border. We live as people beyond the borders. Yeah, we have our political opinions. Yes, we make wise and rational decisions based on what's happening in the world. Yes, we have a right to vote. And all of that's to be encouraged, and difference is inevitable. But we live as people who have a view beyond the border, with a vision that is greater than the leaders of this world. All they can see are borders and walls and fear. And so we have a choice as we witness the events of our time unfolding before us. We can try to stop what's happening and feel. We can try to slow what's happening and be frustrated. Or we can try to shape what's happening and find fulfillment. Because as Christians, we have a responsibility to shape the narrative, to alter the story, to give fresh perspective on what is happening, rather than getting into the trenches and getting dirty with everyone else. So how do we shape the narrative of our time? How do we move from borders to bridges? How do we move from fear to faith? How do we move from damaged fragmentation to a united whole? How do we move from factions to friendships? Because that is our call in the gospel. That if we are made whole in Jesus, he calls us to be reconciled to one another. So how do we do this? Well, we do it very simply and very boldly by living a life outside of the status quo, by investing into a life outside of the status quo, by refusing to believe what we are being told by the world around us, and living the values of our kingdom in this world. We become people who see beyond the border. We become people who live beyond the border. The Bible has a very clear message on this. One of the greatest border disputes in biblical record is found in Joshua 22. I'm actually not going to read this passage, and that will maybe horrify some of you. But it's quite long and rambly, and I'm sure most of you will appreciate that I'm quite long and rambly, and you don't need a long rambly text in the middle there as well. I'm going to paraphrase it for you, Joshua 22. The land of Israel is centered around the Jordan River. The Jordan River actually runs right up the middle of the land that God gave to his people. The river itself acts as a natural border. It's a boundary marker between west and east. still a very volatile region today. And I'm sure we can all picture the map some way in our own minds with the Dead Sea at the bottom and the Jordan River running north above it. You have the land on the west and you have the land on the east. And in Joshua 22, all of the tribes of Israel were over on the west bank. They were over there, they were living there, and they were prospering there. But there were some who were there, some of the tribes who were there, who belonged to the eastern side. And they came to Joshua and they said, "We want to go back east. We want to go back home. We want to take what we've got. We want to go back to our homeland. Is that okay?" They were the tribes of Dan and Manasseh. And Joshua said as their leader, "Yeah, that's fine. You can go back east." So they packed up all their stuff and they headed off. And Joshua said to them in chapter 22, verse 5, he said, "Take these five things with you as you go." He says, "Be careful to keep the commandment and the law that Moses gave you. So as you go, be careful to remember these things: to love the Lord your God, walk in all his ways, obey all his commands, hold fast to him, and serve him with all your heart and soul, with all your energy." Take that message with you. Let that ring in your ears as you head east. So these tribes and all of their possessions and their entourages move from west to east. And they come to the natural border between west and east. It's the Jordan River. And they have to cross the river somehow. But as they get there and they camp there, in those days they would have moved very slowly, slowly grazing as they went. So nothing was really done in a rush. But as they got to the Jordan River, they started to realize that they had left behind the major tribes of Israel and the worshiping center of the people of God. That God had said they had to build an altar, and on this altar they would make their sacrifices, and this would become the place of worship, and it would be the central focal point for all of the tribes of Israel, and it was over on the west side. And as they moved away from Shiloh toward the Jordan, they felt they were missing out on some of the action. These three tribes had separated away from the others, and they were moving further and further away from the center of the action where God showed up, where sins were atoned for, where the Spirit of God was evident, where the leader was. So as they moved towards the Jordan River, as they came to this border, they thought, "Well, what will we do so that we don't feel that we're missing out?" So they built a replica altar on the west bank of the Jordan. It's the same size, it looked the same. And as they built this altar, they were building it as a sign of solidarity with those who lived on the west. So they were building this altar to remember, to be in spiritual partnership with those who were on the other side. But whenever the tribes in Shiloh heard about this, they gathered together and they said, "They are building an altar over on the west bank of the Jordan. They're marking a boundary. They're emphasizing a border. They're disputing the sovereignty of God. They're defying us as their brothers and sisters. This is an act of war." So in Shiloh, they interpret the building of an altar as an act of war. But at the altar at the Jordan, they are interpreting it as an act of solidarity. You see what's happening? A massive, catastrophic misunderstanding. And there's no email, no Twitter, no Facebook. They're not able to fire things back and forward and figure out what's going on. The visual representation of this altar was enough to get the people in Shiloh agitated. So what did they do? They got a delegation together from Shiloh, high priest and some others, and they went over to talk to the guys on the Jordan. And they came and confronted them. And they confronted them face to face. And that's the first thing we've got to learn about border disputes. I don't know which border dispute's ringing in your mind this morning, whether it is the political border dispute or whether there's a border dispute in your own life, whether you've been running behind closed doors or building up walls or separating yourself off or having disagreements or fighting your corner or falling out with people. Maybe there's a border dispute in your home and relationships have broken down, catastrophic misunderstandings have got out of control. Maybe when you walk into the workplace, it's not a very happy place. It's a place for the fragmentation. It's divided. It's divisive. It's caustic, it's toxic. You don't know how to live in that. There's borders everywhere. How do we live in a world of borders? Well, the first thing we learn from the Israelites is that they had the courage to go and speak face to face with those they had the issue with. So they send a delegation and they confront the issue. They say, what have you done? You're challenging the sovereignty of God. This is an act of war against us. We're very unhappy with this. Now, this is sin in the eyes of God, and we know that if you sin, that sin affects us, it affects our community. We're still living with the consequences of the sin of a previous generation. What are you doing? Do you understand the weight of what you're doing? Would you have some sense here? You're splitting the community. And they say their piece to the people on the border, and the people on the border hear what they have to say, and they say, hold on a minute, you've got it all wrong. It might look that way, but that's never what was intended. This was actually a sign of solidarity with you. We actually wanted to remember the good old days back in Shiloh. We wanted this to be a marker of remembrance. This was never about division. And so there is a conversation. They seek to understand, to compromise, to find some conciliation between them rather than going to war. And things then tend to settle down. And there's a celebration. They celebrate the fact that this is actually a good thing. This border marker actually became a bridge between the two communities on either side of the river. So when I think about that, and I think about the world we live in, the world full of borders and fear and insecurity, and I think of how we should live in this world, I'm thinking that, yeah, we could learn something from the Israelite people in terms of courage, confrontation, conversation, conciliation, comfort, compromise, celebration, community. How many other C words do you want me to throw out there? I had a few suggested to me earlier. Catholic was one of them. That would be a problem here, wouldn't it? But they were Catholic in their approach to their nation. They were Catholic in their approach to their worship. They were Catholic in their understanding of their mission in the world. They were about uniting, coming together. I believe in God the Father. I believe in Christ the Son. I believe in the Holy Spirit, the three in one. I believe in the Holy Catholic Church. Living without division in order to see beyond the borders of our world politically and personally in order that we might bring the kingdom here on earth rather than getting embroiled in the debate and the fear and the secular stagnation that happens whenever God is out of the equation. And so here we are thinking about living as people of God in a divided world. And as I do that, I have two thoughts in my mind. The first one is that I live south of a border. Thankfully today, yesterday, I didn't need to get my visa in order to travel from south to north. I'm still carrying a British passport, by the way. I'm proud to do so. I haven't quite moved to the other side just yet. But we have been very aware in Dublin as Presbyterians in a minority, who incidentally, I was totaling it up today, I reckon around about 2,000 Presbyterians worshiping in the Dublin and Munster Presbytery today. You don't know where the Dublin and Munster Presbytery has its boundaries, but I'll tell you, it's everything in the Republic of Ireland apart from Sligo, Monaghan, Cavan and Louth. Because every other county south of that is the Dublin and Munster Presbytery. Huge geographical area with millions of people. It is post-Christian. It is post-fact. It is aggressively secular. It is a cold house for evangelicals. And the Republic of Ireland, we have 1.5% of the population call themselves evangelical Christians, just slightly more than you get in Spain and Italy. The Republic of Ireland is the least evangelized English-speaking nation in the Western world. The least evangelized English-speaking nation in the Western world. And there are around about 2,000 Presbyterians worshiping in the Dublin Munster Presbytery this morning. And I reckon there are between 3,000 and 4,000 Presbyterians worshiping in the Ballymena area this morning. Poles apart. When you plot the hotspots of Presbyterian Christians from the plantation hundreds of years ago, you see the greatest concentration of Presbyterians were in Antrim and North Down. You plot the same graph today, Antrim and North Down. The border is an issue. How do we see beyond the border? Because if Ireland is the least evangelized country in the English-speaking Western world, where is the most evangelized country in the English-speaking Western world? Northern Ireland. How do we live beyond borders? How do we migrate? How do we do mission on our own land? It's a question I'm still struggling to answer, but it's good that there is partnership and there is a will and a heart for that. But the second thing that's on my mind at the minute is what I see at the back of the church, and you can't see it because you're looking the other way, but it's the cross. And the cross of Jesus was the ultimate boundary marker. The altar for those at the Jordan, yeah, represents something of sacrifice. The cross represents everything of sacrifice. It was a boundary marker. Why is the cross a boundary marker? Well, it represents the end of the road for so many people. It's a stumbling block. Some people can't get past. Jesus himself on the cross said, "It is finished." The cross marks the end. It's the end of the road. It's a boundary marker. But actually, it's not. Because the cross is not an act of defiance. It's not a challenge to the sovereignty of God. In fact, it's an invitation. It's a boundary marker that is also a bridge to the other side. It is a sign of spiritual solidarity for all those people who claim to follow Jesus. The cross is the means by which we are reconciled, where the two halves become whole, where the border is removed, where a new humanity is created. Let me read again to you from Ephesians chapter 2 about this new humanity that we just spoke of earlier. For he himself, Ephesians 2:14, for Jesus himself is our peace, who has made the two one, who has destroyed the barrier and the dividing wall of hostility by abolishing in his flesh the law with its commandments and regulations. His purpose was to create in himself one new humanity. The hope of this world rests in people of the kingdom of God living as a new humanity beyond the borders, seeking to converse, looking for conciliation, bringing comfort, seeking to understand rather than go into conflict, and seeking to celebrate with brothers and sisters on either side. Remembrance, spiritual solidarity, and a bridge. I want to ask you a question as I finish to challenge. And it's simply this: where is your border dispute? Where is your border dispute? Where have you built the walls where you are feeling secure behind this veneer? It might be your own front door. You close the front door and no one gets in. Because behind that front door you feel safe, secure, or where it is where you are truly yourself and no one else you feel will understand you. It might be within your workplace where you are the peacekeeper, where you're the one who has been called to live and to work in a situation where no one understands this message of reconciliation and you have to bring it. It might be within your own home. There might be a border dispute there. Relationships have broken down or something has gotten in the way and there has been catastrophic misunderstanding that needs some bold and courageous movement towards reconciliation. It might be that you operate in the political sphere or in the business world. How do you help to shape the narrative that helps us to move beyond borders, to live as people with a Catholic vision of our church's mission in this world? That's my challenge. Where's your border dispute? And how are you allowing the reconciling power of the gospel to invade your world and your world situation? In just a while, I'm going to pray. I'm going to ask Bobby to come up and sing for us. He's got a song here, which is it's a thought-provoking song, and it's one which speaks of unity and reconciliation and the power of the gospel. As I said earlier when I read from Ephesians 2, this is the gospel. You cannot be saved, you cannot be a Christian, you cannot be any of that and not allow the gospel to impact on your sense of division from one to the other. How do we live as people beyond the borders with a vision of God that is greater than any vision that any other man has?